This is Lee Hazelwood.
And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. This morning, we're going to hear all about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report that was issued this week, saying we don't have much time left to reverse the climate change that may destroy mankind. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local renewable weather and the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
The news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. Stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood.
The one-night-only reading of Aaron Proctor's Alternative Canon, a sacrilegious romp at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill on April 11th, is just one of the many creative community events on the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org. Saugerty's Round the Bend Theater presents the show, directed by Beth Ryan Troxell, at 7:30 p.m., Monday, April 11th, at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this event or many others, or even adding your own event to get it read on the radio and seen around the world on the WGXC website at WGXC.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Natasha Von Holdridge reports for Columbia Green Media that Ichabod Crane High School officials declared a shelter-in-place order on April 6th. Posting to the district website, Superintendent Suzanne Guntlow reported that, quote, a concerning social media post which referenced a weapon was brought to the attention of the administration by an Ichabod Crane High School student, unquote. And officials immediately followed emergency protocols and notified local law enforcement. The Columbia County Sheriff's Office said that out of an abundance of caution, the high school was under a hold in place and the middle and primary schools were in lockout status. During a lockout, students must stay in their classrooms and no one is permitted to enter or leave the building, but classes continue as planned. According to Guntlow, over the course of the day, the source of the post was identified and everyone involved was interviewed and searched. Columbia County Sheriff Don Kropps told the Times Union that the social media post caused, quote, concern not only to the staff but our agency, unquote. But he declined to disclose its content because of the investigation. In addition to the sheriff's office, members of the Troy, Albany, and state police responded. Police dogs swept the area, Kropps said, but, quote, located nothing of concern, unquote. Kropps said students were dismissed early and police conducted their final sweep of the school at 2:30 p.m. The lockdown was the second in as many days in the Capital Region. An email threat delivered to a staff member in the Menons District April 5th led to a lockout there.
Noah Eckstein writes for Columbia Green Media that the city of Hudson is, and I quote, in the middle of a housing and rental crisis, end quote. The apartment renter finder website Zumper says average rents for a one-bedroom apartment in Hudson rose 6% in 2021 to $1,900 per month. There has been no new affordable housing built there in many years, and many apartments and homes have been converted to short-term rentals, driving rents higher. Meanwhile, people keep moving to Columbia County, especially since the COVID-19 pandemic began. Nancy Falsetto, a real estate agent with Brown Harris Stevens, said, and I quote, "You're not going to find a two-bedroom for $700 per month in Hudson. People who own properties want rental income, and they will make more from Airbnb than from renting," end quote. The story claims that there were only 6 one-bedroom apartments for rent in December 2021 in Hudson, averaging $1,450 for a one-bedroom. Robert Cavanaugh, a real estate broker for Barnes and Farms Realty, LLC, said, and I quote, "I get calls every day from people looking for apartments, and I have nothing to show them," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mark Albert reports for the Hearst Television National Investigation Unit that Amtrak has asked the Transportation Security Administration to start screening some of its passengers against the watch list maintained by the Threat Screening Center to see if known or suspected terrorists have been riding the rails, according to a U.S. Department of Homeland Security document obtained by the Hearst Television National Investigative Unit. The DHS privacy impact assessment acquired by Hearst disclosed the existence of a rail passenger watch list screening program. The program was previously unreported. It would compare personal passenger information from Amtrak, which may also later include a traveler's, quote, publicly available social media, unquote, profiles viewed by DHS personnel, to the government's terrorist screening database. If the TSA finds any matches, the agency says it would provide Amtrak with statistical but anonymous results purged of passenger names, at least for the initial stage. But in the same document, the department notes that the information gathered could be used for other purposes, including that potential and confirmed matches may be shared, quote, with other law enforcement agencies pursuant to established routine uses, unquote. Currently, airline passengers can opt out of watch list screening by choosing not to fly. However, Amtrak passengers apparently will not have that option. Amtrak routes go through 46 of the 50 states, and New York had the country's highest ridership, with people getting on and off Amtrak stations more than 13 million times in 2019, according to the latest figures from the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. The Albany Rensselaer station was the ninth busiest nationwide, with passengers entering and exiting Amtrak stations there more than 800,000 times. The new rail passenger screening is slated to begin once Amtrak discloses the policy to passengers in its online privacy policy. Currently, that webpage has not been updated since November. The data collected by the TSA will be retained for 2 years, the document says. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
Chloe Callahan reports in the Times Union, while the affordable housing crisis continues throughout the Hudson Valley, a developer wants to put a luxury 36-condo high-end residential housing development in Rhinebeck. Local opposition, though, is not about affordability or lack of housing for locals. David Weiner, a member of the Rhinebeck Coalition, formed to oppose the project, said, and I quote, "The main concern about Rock Ledge is that dumping 36 private condominium developments along a rural road that is zoned to have houses built only on 5 acres destroys the rural character of the area," end quote. Charles Blatchman, a developer behind several luxury hotels in the region, including Hotel Kinsley, a boutique hotel in Kingston, and Inness, a resort and golf course in Accord, wants to build a 36-condominium project called Rock Ledge at 492 Acre Hook Road in Rhinebeck. His argument to the opposition is that without development, the building would otherwise remain vacant and vulnerable to decay, and condos would create less traffic there than it was as a drug rehabilitation facility decades ago. The Daytop Village Foundation Incorporated opened that facility in 1987 as a substance abuse treatment center with 50 residents, staff offices, and a gym, but closed in 2009. The new proposal is for 8 of the 36 condos within existing buildings that are listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and the remaining 28 condos would be brand new construction on the 135-acre site. So far, opposition says they have a petition with 600 signatures. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that a proposal to increase spending for child care included in the state budget proposal is running into problems. The development comes as lawmakers and Governor Kathy Hochul continue to negotiate a state spending plan that was expected to pass last week. Plan under consideration would provide child care support for families that earn 300% above the federal poverty rate with a subsidy rate of 80%. But the estimate that only 15% of the families that qualify would participate is considered, quote, ludicrously low, unquote, according to a source. The concern is the lack of funding and low estimation of participation in child care programs would lead to it quickly running out of money. That could force county governments to pick up costs or create a waiting list. A push for child care in the budget this year was brought in large part by the COVID-19 pandemic and the complications families faced during the public health crisis. The $3 billion cost for the program was considered by many advocates to be the minimum amount needed for the program. Read more about the story at spectrumlocalnews.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports that the Kingston Housing Authority is getting a 32-year payment in lieu of taxes agreement from the city's Common Council for a housing project. But it is not for adding new units in the midst of a housing crisis. Instead, the money goes to modernize the Stuyvesant apartments. At an April 5th Common Council meeting where the tax abatement was approved, Alderman Tony Davis said, and I quote, "I think it's important and prudent that the city, we assist as much as we can in regard to these residents, these constituents, having a good environment to go home to. If we don't do this pilot, these apartments are just going to deteriorate even more," end quote. Residents who currently live in the apartments spoke at the meeting in favor of the pilot agreement. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. April showers are expected for the next 2 days. On Thursday, showers are likely before 8 a.m., then rain between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m., and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. The temperature high will be 48 degrees. Rain and possibly a thunderstorm before 2 a.m. on Thursday night, then showers are likely, mainly between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m., with a temperature low of 42 degrees. And on Friday, a chance of showers mainly after 2 p.m., It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 59 degrees. And more showers Friday night, mainly after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 38 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio April 7th, Thursday, at Seed 90.7 FM. At 11 a.m., tune in the Transformational Listening Show, this week with tracks from Brij Naharjan and Ram Narayan. Alan Skerritt hosts the Crossroads and Rhythm Show live from Columbia County at noon after the local news. Then it's time for the What's the Frequency Kenneth program, this week looking at Justice Jackson and the Butchery. Then everyone's brains are mashed on the Turn on the News show at 3 p.m. We're live from Hudson with C.C. Graham and Tom DiPietro at 4 p.m. on the WGXC Afternoon Show. Catskill Maker Syndicate crew is live from West Bridge Street in Catskill with Singularity at 7 p.m. talking technology. And it's time for Donna and Honey's Love Motel, the monthly edition of relationship advice and more from Anna Kanovskaya and Amanda Lees at 8 p.m. And then at 9, it's time to go live to Toronto with Andrew O'Connor and Disco 3000. And 10 p.m., we go live to Columbia County with The Magic Stranger on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Turn out or tune in Friday, April 15th to performances from Reckless Eric and Scout Gillett at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. They perform from 8 to 10 p.m. Catskill's Reckless Eric is best known for the song Whole Wide World that you may have heard recently in a commercial on television. And Scout Gillett is from Brooklyn. WGXC has live webcasts of each and every show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill and sometimes broadcast them on 90.7 FM. This show with Reckless Eric and Scout Gillett will be broadcast on 90.7 FM from 8 to 10 p.m. Friday, April 15th. Turn out to the Avalon Lounge or tune in to WGXC, your creative community solar-powered radio station.
Got questions about technology, cybersecurity? Whether it's a remote car starter or jellyfish, try your luck at stumping our panel on the Thingularity radio program. Just send your questions to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com. That is catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com. And one of our many interns will be electroshocked into inducing an answer for your listening pleasure. Listen to the Thingularity radio program every first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, April 7th. Early this morning, we see 40 degrees in Halcott Center and 45 degrees in Kingston. The soil is still around 42 degrees. Rain is expected all day, getting stronger in the afternoon. Temperatures will rise just a few degrees to 53 at 4 p.m. Overnight, more rain and a low of only 47, so the temperature is not going to waver that much. Tomorrow, a high of 60, but we still get some lingering chances of rain, especially in the afternoon. Saturday will also have a chance of rain all day and a high of 53. Sunday has a chance for rain and a high of 51. We'll see how that comes into focus as time progresses. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:40 a.m., then high tide at 7:54 a.m., low tide again at 2:52 p.m., then high tide once again at 8:49 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 45. Sunset today will be at 7:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see more magnetic unrest today as NASA tracks an approaching coronal mass ejection. Solar wind speed is currently 439 kilometers per second at 7.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 61. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stephanie Fleischman of Columbiaville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe at Wave Farm in New York with the WGXC Radio News. Free speech seems like an endangered concept these days. The right wants to stop teachers from talking about many subjects with students and ban books they do not agree with. The left is trying to quash a growing trend of racist political speech. Neither side is happy, and radio hosts who talk for a living are being fired for what they say. There are two recent radio firings in the news. Last week, a radio host in Kazakhstan was fired after she wrote on Facebook, quote, "We will call in Uncle Vova if you talk too much," unquote. Uncle Vova is Russian leader Vladimir Putin, who has ordered an invasion of Ukraine, complete with mounting cases of war crimes and horrific attacks against civilians. Kazakhstan shares a large border with Russia and partners with the country on many economic issues. The Europa Plus Kazakhstan radio station fired host Lubov Panava after the comment. With a large Russian population and rumors that Russia could invade Kazakhstan, any talk about Putin there is bound to be controversial, and it is understandable why a host supporting Putin might cause a radio station to let them go. In the United States, that's not the case, as Tucker Carlson almost nightly says things in support of Putin on Fox News. But WMAL near Washington, D.C., fired a host last week for posting a photo of Vice President Kamala Harris wearing the color brown in a tweet that read, quote, "Kamala looks like a UPS employee. What can brown do for you? Nothing good, apparently," unquote. Right-wing commentators have decried the decision as against the First Amendment, which is silly since the government did not fire the host, and businesses can fire people in this country for what they post on social media. Amber Athey, the host, said owners of the station Cumulus Media told her the tweet was racist when they let her go. But she might have been fired for more than just one tweet. The New York Post reports that after the UPS tweet, Athey, quote, "spoke critically of protests in favor of trans kids at the University of North Texas," and as she wrote, quote, "a group of maniacal left-wing activists who want to chemically castrate children in the name of gender affirmation came after me," unquote. Cumulus Media officials have yet to talk about the issue in the media. This has been the WGXC Radio News. Go to wavefarm.org for more information.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There's nothing wrong with making an honest profit, but as gas prices have soared, your companies have funneled record profits back to shareholders.
Oil executives were in the hot seat as a House subcommittee accused companies of price gouging. Committee Chair Congressman Frank Polloni questioned why pump prices remain high while crude oil prices have been dropping for weeks. ExxonMobil Chairman and CEO Darren Wood countered, "No single company sets prices.
The market establishes the price based on available supply and the demand for that supply. Continued investments in new production is the only way to achieve balanced markets and more affordable prices that bring real relief at the pump."
While most at the hearing acknowledged the Russian-Ukraine conflict's effect on fuel prices, Democrats scolded executives for sitting on thousands of leases to drill on public lands, artificially squeezing supply. Congressman Morgan Griffith, the highest-ranking Republican on the panel, blamed the White House.
"When President Biden points to Vladimir Putin or Big Oil or other scapegoats as the culprit, I'm reminded of the words of the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to that man standing behind the curtain."
The six companies at the hearing recorded $77 billion in profits in 2021. In response to Russia's alleged war crimes in Ukraine, President Biden announced a new round of sanctions targeting President Vladimir Putin's inner circle, including his daughters and more financial institutions. Three dozen former members of Congress are asking lawmakers to ban themselves from trading individual stocks while in office. A House panel will hold a hearing today after reports emerged dozens of members of Congress have violated conflict of interest laws. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer applauded a White House extension through August of the pause on federal student loan payment collections, which began at the start of the pandemic.
Of course, I believe the president should go further and forgive $50,000 in student loans permanently. It's a huge burden on so many people.
The House voted to hold two of President Trump's advisors in contempt for defying subpoenas from the January 6th committee. Peter Navarro and Dan Scavino both refused to testify, claiming executive privilege. Meanwhile, a New Mexico man was acquitted of misdemeanor charges for entering the Capitol building that day. A federal judge said the defendant's actions were minimal and non-serious. It's the first acquittal of a January 6th defendant. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has a new plan to tackle the influx of undocumented immigrants he says are overwhelming local communities. Charter buses.
We are sending them to the United States Capitol, where the Biden administration will be able to more immediately address the needs of the people that they are allowing to come across our border.
The move comes in response to the end of Title 42 restrictions, which prevented migrants from crossing the border during the pandemic. There are reportedly 1.7 million undocumented immigrants in Texas. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
I'm Tom Rowe. You've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we're standing by to talk with Sarahana Shrisha, candidate for the New York State Assembly 103rd District. That's in Ulster County. Stay tuned. This is Fela.
Brothers and sisters, the father of Pan-Africanism, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, says to all black people all over the world, the secret of life is to have no fear. We all have to understand that. Thank you.
All right, I am Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Morning Show, and we now have on the line with us Sarahana Shrestha. Did I get it right?
Yeah, Sarahana Shrestha.
Sarahana Shrestha, yes. I'm I'm making my E short or long or something. Who you're running for the 103rd District Assembly seat in... well, we don't know exactly where it's going to be, but it's somewhere in Ulster County, right? Depending on how the redistricting comes out?
Yeah, so most of the district is Ulster County. It covers almost all of Ulster County. And then we have Red Hook and Rhinebeck in Dutchess County, which was already there. In the redistricting, the only thing that we did is add Saugerties, and we took out Ashokan, Plattekill, and Rochester. But, you know, I guess it's not final. But yeah, it's most of Ulster County and a little bit of Dutchess County.
Yeah, I guess we'll a judge will make some ruling within the week. We guess, but we don't know exactly yet.
So, yes.
But we assume that probably it's going to be this new. But it's basically the same. It's whether or not Saugerties and Ashokan, I guess, are represented or not.
Yeah. So for now, we're just going ahead, assuming that it's going to stay with Saugerties in.
And you're also the head of the Ulster County Democratic Socialists of America. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we have a Mid-Hudson Valley chapter of Democratic Socialists of America. And, you know, we cover Ulster County, Dutchess County, and Orange County. And I've been co-chairing the Ulster County committee, which organizes people, members who live here, and, you know, issues that are particular to that county. One of the big things that we did last year was run a county legislator race, which was very exciting because we ran Phil Erner, who's a farmer and, you know, very progressive person, really a very good-hearted person, in the primary for Ulster County Legislature, and we unseated the incumbent who had been in office for 27 years. So that was our highlight last year. That was very exciting.
And you're trying to unseat another incumbent this year, but we'll get to that in a moment. First, I wanted to just you to tell us how you got to be running for office. Tell us a little bit about your background and what got you here.
Sure. So I am from Kathmandu, Nepal. That's where I was born and raised, and that's where I was, until I left to come to school in New York. That's how I arrived here. And I've always been, you know, Nepal is very, you know, politically, it's been very active, lots of things going on, lots of uprisings, lots of revolutions that happened while I was growing up there. So I've always been a very politically attuned person. And recently, in the last decade or whatever, my focus shifted to really wanting to organize locally, especially on climate. And that's how I got into organizing with the Public Power Coalition in New York, which a lot of DSA chapters are part of, but also a lot of other organizations that are organizing around the issue of energy justice and, you know, energy democracy. So I was organizing on public power legislation for New York. And I met a lot of state representatives to try to get their support on this bill. And the short answer is that I was kind of disappointed by the lack of ambition and also the lack of understanding of what we really need to do to tackle the climate crisis, what, you know, justice means in terms of a green transition, how it needs to be equitable. And when the legislative session ended and we were sort of, you know, in the middle of a pandemic with lots of organizing wins, but, you know, having encountered dead ends in Albany, we decided that we really need to change the culture of our government, because it's really that, or it's being stuck with not being able to move on anything. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now during the, you know, the budget negotiations. Like, a lot of the things, a lot of the same old are coming out of the governor's office in terms of prioritizing vanity projects, not having ambition for climate plans, not having
vanity.
The will to
vanity projects, you mean the $1 billion they're trying to give to a billionaire couple? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yes. So the priorities of, you know, that's why we talk about the culture of Albany, because the the priorities are the same. I think that the people who are, you know, in a position to very much impact our lives have the wrong priorities. And that's why, you know, I decided to run, because it was not something that I had ever planned or even considered I would do. It really came from my experience in organizing and seeing that the electoral side was really a dead end, and that we needed to put people in office who can organize around issues and really, you know, speak up for the things that are getting shut down right now.
Well, you seem very good at this. You while you were speaking, I was searching for this tweet that Governor Kathy Hochul sent out last night, but it perfectly dovetails with what you just said. She has this, I don't know what she said in the tweet isn't that important, but there's a graphic with it. She's crowing about $34 million to improve energy efficiency for over 1,000 homes in New York. That's how she's solving the climate crisis. She's going to fix 1,000 homes in New York. I mean, it's just this tweet is just insane. 1,000 homes? Yeah. By the time we fix climate change, it's going to be 25-25 or what?
Yeah, it's going to be, according to our calculation, it's going to be 8,000 years.
I mean, 1,000 homes? Why are we trying to make 1,000 homes energy efficient? I mean, any home energy efficient is great. I'm not arguing, but
yeah,
1,000 homes does not seem to be enough. I mean, this climate report came out this week that says if we don't do major things in 3 years, it's all over.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We're in New York, right? We have great ideas. We have great people. We have a lot of resources. We have a lot of progressives. And all the bills that we need to pass to get us on the path to that timeline, they're already there. You know, we're not waiting for people to come up with solutions. The solutions are there. It was presented to the governor, you know, for more than several weeks, but especially last week and this week. And that's the choice she made, is to go with these, 1,000 homes and the stadium, instead banning gas in new construction starting 2024, instead of building publicly owned renewable energy so that we can really be on track to get to our clean energy goals by 2040. So she had those choices. And, you know, my opponent had the choices to stand up for those things. And that's what didn't happen. You know, this is a district that's very forward-thinking, that wants these things, that's very involved in fighting for many things, not just climate, but also for fair pay for home care, for example. That was another issue that was brought to the governor, you know, that we didn't see a win in, that many people in our district are involved in fighting for, that, you know, many of my friends who were canvassing with us got arrested fighting for this issue. So generally, we're just seeing that there's a disconnect between what Albany is willing to do and what we are willing to fight for on the outside.
Yeah, so you hinted there that you're running against an incumbent Democrat, Kevin Cahill, who has been there a long time. I don't know how long he's been there. So why do you need to unseat a Democrat to get things done?
Because I think that this is a district that can position itself as a leader in pushing for progressive legislation for the entire state, you know. And if we don't use this office to really push for those things, for the bold vision and sort of the political courage that we need, then I really see that the office is being underutilized. And that's the thing that we need statewide, is we cannot have legislators right now in New York City who will in New York State who will say, I will vote for something if it goes to a vote. Like, we cannot afford that type of leadership, because what we need people to say in Albany is, these are the things that we are going to make sure goes to a vote, because if it goes to a vote, that means it's going to get the vote. These are the things that we are going to speak up you know, against the people who have monopoly over our government. You know, that's corporations, that's lobbyists, and there are a lot of representatives who are more allied with them than they are with people who want some of these things. So we need somebody who is going to be steps ahead of what people need rather than steps behind. You know, I don't think at this time of crisis, we can afford to say that you tell me what I need to do and then I will consider it. We don't have time for that kind of thing. You know, like, we need a leader who knows what needs to be done and who knows what kind of work needs to go into making that happening, who can build that coalition basically to pass some of these legislation that have been stalling in New York State.
We've talked a little about climate, and we could do probably an hour on climate in New York, but what other issues are you trying to address?
I think the really pressing, you know, the top three, we really need to resolve access to healthcare. People are struggling with that. A lot of people that we met at the doors have said that their quality of life has gone down because of their increasing difficulty with access to healthcare. And we really want to pass universal healthcare in New York. We have the New York Health Act, which has been stalling as well, which now includes long-term care that we need. And then we need to make sure that hospitals and healthcare workers are getting the resources that they need. You know, in our district, for example, in Kingston, we had an issue of a hospital cutting costs and laying off people in a questionable way, downsizing in a, you know, some facilities in a questionable way where it compromised the safety of what the staff is able to do in that hospital. And then we also have a huge housing crisis. During the pandemic, this is a district where the market was completely upended by, you know, lots of unpredicted migration that happened during the crisis. And we should, the reason we should always plan is because when unexpected things happen, when disruptions happen, there will be lots of unplanned things that will happen. And migration is one of those, you know, people moving from one place to another, which will happen increasingly during climate crisis. So we really need to figure out how to have a stable housing market that protects people where they live, and that is not being exploited primarily by corporate real estate developers and corporate landlords who are just trying to maximize profits out of the housing situation. Like, if we look at places like Kingston and New Paltz in the district, the rents are incredible. You know, they're going up by an amount that makes it unaffordable for people to continue living here. And then there's also schools. Schools and teachers feel very neglected, very abandoned. You know, when we talk about schools, I think we should also talk about childcare, because we also have parents who have had during the pandemic to struggle with having to work and having to sort of have children at home, you know, and sometimes parents have struggled with what to do with the children during the pandemic, and the teachers have had to take a lot of that burden on. So overall, you know, this basic foundation level of protections that we need for working people, because right now we are in a situation where there's lots of crises happening and we have not made the moves to start checking things off of our list that would protect people.
And you're talking too about issues that are not just important in Ulster County, but the entire Hudson Valley has a housing crisis. And in Hudson, our hospital locally stopped doing childbirths a couple years ago, which is an incredible burden on folks here.
Yep.
And the school certainly is an issue just as much everywhere else. But the housing crisis in here, Ulster County, up and down the Hudson Valley, it's just, you know, there's one thing in Greene County, there are actually fewer buildings than there were 10 years ago. Not just houses or anything, there's just fewer buildings for a variety of reasons. But and then there's just an incredible lack of hotel rooms here, and everyone's doing these short-term B&B things that are, again, wrecking the housing stock. And no one is building affordable housing. No one. I mean, I guess there's one project in Ulster County, I think I've heard about. They're talking about turning an old industrial site into affordable housing. But But there's almost nothing. You can't get a new project built.
Yeah, I think that's really the importance of the idea of being a leader who can be steps ahead so that we can have a plan, you know, because going into any of these volatile situations where we are leaving everything up to the market and hope something good happens, like that has already hurt a lot of people. You know, that has already made a lot of people homeless, a lot of their lives more unstable. And we are doing that basically across the board, right? We are putting too many of our chips into the market for everything that people need for survival. That's our energy system, that's our housing, that's our healthcare. You know, if we talk about how much student debt people have, it's also our education, because we have not properly funded the public education institutions that we have in our state. They have really deteriorated in terms of what they are able to do and provide as a service to students. So yeah, across the board, I think the problem is that we're just saying we'll let the market figure it out, and the market has failed. You know, it has not delivered what people need.
And how do you, if you get elected, how do you affect change when it's basically still three people in a room, I guess the last week or whatever, figuring out what are, how many billions of dollars are giving away to this, the Buffalo Bills, or how we're not going to ban gas in buildings, even though all the reports I've seen, it's cheaper and it's not going to cost money. How do you?
Yeah, and everybody we talk to at the door is very much on board with some of these things that are getting killed in Albany. You know, people really support these ideas. I think, well, the good news is I'm not the only one running, right? So I am running as a movement candidate to represent a movement, and this movement has many candidates running. And, you know, so how we're going to fight is basically by being a coalition of progressive representatives in Albany who can stand up to, you know, like you said, a few people who might have more power than others. And also by really we need to create also transparency for how Albany works, because the truth is a lot of people just don't even know how much impact the state legislature and the state government can happen in their lives, because it's a lot. You know, it's most of the things really that can come out of that government to improve our lives. So we also need to create transparency for how some of these things happen. Who is, for example, who is fighting against this gas ban? You know, there was some information that came out of that conversation last week. But most importantly, we need to build a coalition of progressive candidates who can get into office and become the majority. That's the only way that we can change the dialogue of what we can do. And that's what we're doing, because, you know, I am a part of multiple slates. There's the Green New York slate that's coming out of the Democratic Socialists of America, that's really to push for a Green New Deal. And it has another Hudson Valley candidate that's running part of this slate. And then there's also the Working Families Party We Can't Wait slate, which is another slate of progressive candidates that are running to build this majority progressive voice in Albany.
And I guess what we're kind of leaving out of this conversation is money. It's lobbying donations from the real estate agents industry that is basically behind some of what we're talking about now, and other things with Democrats and Republicans. How do you get elected in the face of that kind of lobbying donations that those candidates get?
Yeah, so when you run a grassroots campaign, basically the way you win is just by out-organizing, because when you're running a campaign that people believe in, that people are hungry for, that people have been waiting years for, you can really mobilize people. And the mobilization you get out of people like that is worth way more than the dollar value that our opponents will be able to raise. And I'm saying opponents plural, because this is true for every primary challenge that's happening right now, you know, for this project of having a more progressive New York State government. And that's what we're seeing in every single campaign, is that people are really mobilized and putting in a lot of time into knocking doors, into raising money, And making sure that the voters that we need to reach are being reached, and we're having meaningful conversations at the doors. That's what I've been doing personally, is knocking lots of doors, going, you know, one home to another, talking to people about how they're doing, what they really believe in, what they feel like the government has done for them, and what they think that we can do. And we have had, you know, very supportive conversations where our conclusion is that people are really ready for change. You know, they've just been, a lot of people have just been waiting for somebody to run so that they can get behind it. So we really win, you know, with people power. There's no other shortcut.
Yeah, I wonder, when you're knocking on doors and talking to people, what have you been surprised about that people are wanting from the state legislature?
Honestly, I'm surprised by how frustrated people are and how easy it has been to talk to them about the fact that we have a Democratic supermajority, yet we are blocking everything that we want, right? When we say this to people, they don't disagree with us. They are, in fact, wanting to talk about already, like, why, you know, they want to understand why that's happening. And we've met a lot of people who are older, who are really ready for change, because, you know, going into a race like this, the sort of general prediction you make is that younger people are going to be very supportive and the older people are probably going to back the establishment candidate. That has not been the case in our experience. A lot of our strong supporters are older, very informed voters who know what's been going on, you know, these last few decades in terms of where we need to be headed and where we have lost our battles for progressive causes. For example, I've met people, when I talk about public power and the idea of publicly controlled and, you know, publicly owned and democratically controlled energy system, you know, I've met people who have said, I've been fighting for this for the last 30 years. And that's really the reality, is that none of the issues that we are fighting for are brand new inventions. You know, people have been wanting these things for a while, and the culture of our government has just been such that they have been made very out of reach. You know, but now I think that we are closer than ever to getting these things passed and getting these things be the, you know, the sort of popular demands of people. We are closer than ever, and which is why personally I decided to run, is because I felt like we could not afford to waste this momentum by not building on what people are asking for.
This might seem like a small issue, but we ask candidates running in Albany about this every year, and nothing has gotten done yet. There's a bill languishing in Albany right now to make all town meetings live web streamed. I mean, they did it during the pandemic. They can do it. It's easy. It doesn't cost anything. It's simple. It's transparent. It's no-brainer. I mean, we've got local meetings now that don't have reporters anymore. We've got local meetings now where they're breaking the open meetings law left and right. That it's just ridiculous that this can't happen. Are you in favor or against that proposal?
Absolutely. I am in favor of transparency and of people having more knowledge of what happens in our government so that they can be better participants of our democracy. I think it's intentional that people are shut out of real information for what goes on. You know, it's definitely a closed door system. And that's why even when you run a primary, people are offended because they think of this as an assault on the establishment, when really it is our right. You know, it is our right to run for office. This is a democracy where people should be encouraged to run for office, where it should be easier to run for office. That's the other thing. You know, we have campaign finance kicking in soon, I think in 2024, but we definitely need to do more in terms of making our democracy more democratic. So I am definitely in favor of making meetings more accessible for people to sit in and listen to what happens. You know, what are these conversations that are happening? Because I think a lot of people would be surprised also by what actually goes on behind closed doors and what they hear in quotes and in the news.
All right, we're almost running out of time. We're speaking with Sarahana Shrestha from Ulster County, running in the 103rd New York Assembly District. Sarah Hanna, can you give us your website? Can you give us some just general background information? Are you doing any public appearances soon? Tell us what's going on.
Yes, so we are going to Saugerties this Saturday. That's the new town that we gained in our redistricting, and we're doing a kickoff event there to canvass and to get to know people who live there and also to hang out and socialize afterward. You know, you say, how do we win? We win by building bonds. So, you know, this is also about building a community with people who want to get involved in this race. And the website is sarahhannaforassembly.com. So that's SARAHANAFORassembly.com. And you will find our email list there. You will find information about our Saugerties event and all of the other canvas shifts and phone banks that we're doing as well.
And was there a topic that we left out that you really wanted to mention or?
No, I think that we are ready to fight for a better and bolder New York. Hudson Valley is ready. The candidates running on our various slates are ready. And I think that people are ready. So I am very glad to be having this conversation and sort of, you know, amplifying the message of what we need. And I just very excited to talk to people. And election is June 28th. So we'll see what happens. But until then, we're just, you know, moving forward.
And June 28th, unless the court changes that this week, right?
Yes. Yes.
But we'll see. Hopefully soon you'll know if you're campaigning in Saugerties or not.
Yeah. Yes, but we have lots of people to reach, so we're just going to go ahead and have a good, spectacular Saturday. That's what we're calling it, Saugerties Spectacular.
All right. This Saturday in Saugerties, we've been speaking with Sarah Hanna Shrestha. Did I get it right this time?
Yes.
Finally. Thank you for being here. The Situation Fluxus show with Cheryl Kay is coming up next. Stay tuned to your creative community radio station.